You are listening to Kubernetes Bytes, a podcast bringing you the latest from the world of cloud-native data management. My name is Ryan Wallner, and I'm joined by Bhavin Shah, coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. We'll be sharing our thoughts on recent cloud-native news and talking to industry experts about their experiences and challenges managing the wealth of data in today's cloud-native ecosystem.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies, count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. We're coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. Today is August 31st, 2022. Hope everyone is doing well and staying safe. Let's dive into it. Last day of August. I almost said summer. It feels like the last day of summer, but it's still plenty warm out, plenty of sun. I'm not ready for summer to be over, that's for sure.
I'm in denial right now. Yeah, I don't know.
although the pumpkin spice lattes are coming out in full storm, I'm just not quite there yet when it comes
Full disclosure, I am not a big fan of pumpkin spice. Judge me, people.
I don't think you're alone there. I think it's a kind of overrated. It can be good, but pumpkin pie, all for it. Everything else flavored, I don't know. I have a trip coming up, going to Vermont for like 5 or 6 days.
Oh, nice.
Doing a bunch of camping up in the Green Mountains, off-roading, motorcycle, adventure riding kind of a thing, with like 10 or so people just for like 3 or 4 nights. And it's going to be a blast. I feel like that's my last like trip of my summer, and then I'm gonna dive back into things, you know, come fall season. When it comes to this world, we know how fall conference season really comes in force. What about you?
I just came back from a trip, right? Like last week I was out at Glacier National Park. It is so beautiful. Like, man, it's just next level. Like, it became my favorite national park. Like, Yosemite was there, like, and it stood the competition of like Zion and others, but Glacier is like, nope, yeah, this is it. Wow. Like, yeah, like the hikes, the mountains, and the weather was perfect, right? It was not too sunny. It was supposed to rain, but it didn't. And it was just that hazy, cloudy weather. You can see the mountains, you can do your hikes in cool weather, and it was perfect, man. Yeah.
I'm jealous. So top of the list for you, huh?
Yes. Yeah, I'll share some pictures with you and maybe on Twitter as well. But yeah, it was
traveling
great.
A lot. Yeah, I mean, you're traveling right now, so.
Yep, in San Francisco, like back on the West Coast. Like, I don't know why I went back to the East Coast after Montana, but that's how I think PTO and conference planning works out for me. I'm not that good at like making those continuous trips.
No worries. Sometimes even if it's a few days at home, it makes a difference. At least
you can do your laundry, for example. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, today's show is going to be all about GitOps. It's just Bhavin and I. We're going to be digging into sort of what is it and sort of going through some of the tools and sort of philosophy behind it. But before we do that, let's go through our cloud native news. Why don't you kick us off, Bhavin?
Yeah. So like, I think for me, this last couple of weeks, the last week was like really low on news. I know we had like 1.25 and you want to talk about it, but for me, I found like a couple of interesting articles that people can read through and maybe bookmark. Like, the first one of them was from a Container Journal, and it just lists out all the different open source cloud native tools. So like, it goes from CI/CD tools, it goes from security and compliance tools, observability tools, service mesh tools, like just everything, all the options that you have available to you. So if you are looking to add to your different projects that you already use inside your enterprise or inside your organization, you have a list that's ready to go. It spans everything from storage to databases to container runtimes to streaming and messaging. So it's a full list. Again, they don't have details, but at least it gives you all the different options that are available for you. And then following along the trend of like 101 good to know information, SBOM, like Sysdig did a good SBOM 101 or Software Bill of Materials 101. what is it, how does it work, how you should be building one, or how you should be asking one from a vendor, since a lot of us are using open source projects or using container images that we're just pulling down from some registry we don't even know. So it's always good to have an SBOM just in case anything gets attacked or any CVEs or vulnerabilities come out and you need to verify that you're not impacted. So if you're trying to understand more about this new buzzword, which is SBOM, just go read through it. It's a good article. Like it's at least a 10-minute read for you. But yeah, that's a good link to have. And then the final feature was in like the 1.25 release. Spoiler alert, Ryan. I think 1.25 is out now. Yeah. And I know like you'll talk more about it, but the thing that I wanted to highlight was just CSI inline volumes. That became a thing that reached or graduated to general availability in the 1.25 release. I know the CSI inline volumes was something that was added as an alpha feature in 1.15 and beta in 1.16, but it allows you to have another option for ephemeral volumes. So I know we have used like config map volumes and secret volumes and stuff like that. CSI inline volumes just allows you to create an ephemeral storage that follows your pod lifecycle, but from a CSI driver. So it's not your Kubernetes ecosystem, like it is your storage vendor, but it's just an ephemeral volume. So you can in the link that we'll share in the show notes, it does explain like when to use this feature, so and when not to use this feature. So like if you want to persist your data, don't get confused that, oh, this is CSI, so this will be like persistent across my pod restarts. No, this is ephemeral still, but it's an option for ephemeral volumes. But yeah, that's my list.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Absolutely. Yeah, that link you shared with a bunch of the cloud native tools, I think is super interesting, right? And it's not even a long read, but it sort of takes the topic, high level sort of parts you're going to look at in sort of building a cloud native sort of stack anyway, you know. So for those who aren't reading it and listening, scheduling and orchestration, observability, security, compliance, CI/CD, and then sort of dives into each one, which I think is sort of the way that you sort of come into looking at all the different spaces, and sort of the persistent storage is and cloud native database tools is where we live most of the time. And you know, there's always new things kind of cropping up. So I think really useful article there, and an easy read as well. So, yeah, you know, 1.25 is out, and I put it in here because I feel like we've been talking about it for the last three or four shows.
Yep.
And we've covered, I think, what's coming out in 1.25 and sort of what's relevant to Kubernetes storage. So if you want to know those things, go listen to the last few episodes. Or we'll put a bunch of show links into a bunch of sort of recaps. A lot of people do blogs and sort of shows about getting all you need to know in new Kubernetes versions. We'll link those here. But I did want to put it out because it is officially out now that we've been talking about it forever. And one thing I think worth noting is they have in there the change of where you pull images from. So that is now becoming a registry.kdes.io. Not to say that the old KDES GCR.io link will stop working. Of course, they wouldn't just cold turkey everybody on the release date. That's going to still work, but they are encouraging people to switch over. And there's a couple links I'll put in the show here is why they went about doing that. And part of that is spreading the load across cloud providers. They're starting with AWS. You know, obviously the GCR link is a Google Cloud link, and so that's an effort to spread that load. And they've officially put that out, which I think was maybe missed in a lot of the what you need to know podcasts, and even ours. I don't think we've talked about it yet, so worth noting. And there's a lot of automation tools and scripting I know that goes around Kubernetes that may have those types of URLs in it for where you pull images. So go take a look at that. The second thing I put in here was a spotlight on Sig Storage. So this is an interview with Xing Yang.
Previous Kubernetes Bytes guest.
Yeah, and Frederico. So we've had Xing Yang on the show, and it sort of takes you through a conversation about the state of the sort of storage and Kubernetes space, as well as the data protection working group. It talks all about things like, you know, the CRDs and everything. It's a conversational, you can read it out. Xing Yang was a great guest and has lots to say and is, you know, always been very involved in this space. So go take a look at that spotlight on Sig Storage. And the last thing, which I thought was very appropriate for this show, is GitLab released 15.3 and all their GitOps features are free. So, you know, we'll be talking about what GitOps is and maybe how you can go check that out and maybe start using them if you don't know what GitOps is. Mm-hmm. So that I'll put in there, a little quick plug to GitOps, GitLab, I mean, at least. So that is it for Cloud Native News that we had. We'll put all those links in the show notes, and now we can dive into our main topic.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So the topic again is GitOps. I guess the natural place for me to start a show about a topic like this is, what does GitOps mean and what is GitOps, right? And I'll throw this to you, I guess, first, and then we can both maybe give our own point of view on what GitOps is and maybe how we feel about it.
Yep. Yeah. So GitOps, right? I think there's a lot of noise. It's difficult to find the signal. Like if you look at the core definition, the principles, benefits, things that we'll talk about in this pod, it is a very specific thing. But the way people talk about it, there is a lot of confusion between infrastructure as code and GitOps and CI/CD. But just a one-liner, right? GitOps is a way to do Kubernetes cluster management and application delivery. Or it is a way to use Git as your single source of truth for declarative infrastructure and your application stack. So it's just a way for you to use Git as that single source of truth and push your application and infrastructure code, store it there, and then have your Kubernetes clusters run the latest version. So I don't know, that's maybe a three-liner, but yeah, that's my take.
Three-liners are okay, I feel like. Yeah, you make a good point in the fact that I think there's a lot of information about what GitOps is, and maybe that can be confusing, I think, going into GitOps from the start. And we're going to try to do a little bit to help that notion of confusion in sort of discussing this in this podcast. But I think, you know, I'll start with sort of my take. View GitOps as sort of a framework that takes best practices into play, and we'll talk about what those best practices are, and uses those to sort of really develop sort of infrastructure automation and correctness using version control, right? And Git being the version control, because it's in the name. You know, Git is a big part of what this is, and we'll talk about, you know, if you're not familiar with Git, it's a big part of it. You really can't do GitOps without it. But I think it's more of a framework of best practices that we've developed over a period of time to deliver applications and increase developer experience and things like that. So for me, right, it really falls into the category of a framework, because you can use all sorts of tools to make up what GitOps means to you, right? And we'll talk about the different tooling, but I think at a core, right, that's what it really means to me. And maybe that's part of the confusion, is that it can be a little nebulous of a term, like most terms. I mean, so let's dive into sort of how they relate to what we've done historically, right? Mm-hmm. Before GitOps came along in 2017 with Kubernetes, we had a huge DevOps movement, right? And you know, just to show that these terms are so similar, it's because they are very related, right? DevOps is a big part of sort of how we got to a place where we could really dig into something like GitOps, right? And DevOps is more of a philosophy, a culture, again, best practices with tools, right? Things like making sure that you use CI/CD pipelines and, you know, you're focusing on the delivery pipeline of building, testing, and releasing with, you know, different tools and automations and getting that feedback loop right back to the customers. And so these are sort of guiding principles and philosophies that an organization really needs to understand before they can really, I think, adopt something like GitOps. I mean, maybe you could do it if you weren't a DevOps shop, Bhavin. Yeah. Do you think you could just come in and just do GitOps? I think that's the question I'm answering myself.
No, I think you're right. Right, like DevOps, even again another fuzzy term, but it's the way to build applications, build modern applications, and make sure that you are releasing continuously. Right, as you said, the customer feedback loop is important. Like you're pushing code out there, you're using constructs like containers, Kubernetes, microservices to make sure that you can iterate faster on your applications, mm-hmm. Get them in front of your customer. And then if there are any issues with it, or if you want to add more features, just keep working on it, right? It's a continuous development loop rather than just following like the older waterfall model that we had where it took like 9 months to get any release out. So DevOps is like the first step. And like, I think infrastructure as code and GitOps and all of these things are just enablers, right? Like DevOps is a vision, like, okay, you want to get there. And then how do you actually push code to production? And that's where things like infrastructure as code and GitOps and everything can help you.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and historically, right, the reason we call it DevOps is because developers and operations teams were historically two siloed, separate things, right? And it was very hard to communicate between them. Therefore, it took a lot of time to get things into production and deliver on an application, right? Historically, that's why we, you know, I guess, coined DevOps and why it's been successful. It's really that speed and sort of reliability of having that type of framework and allowing companies to scale when they adopt those sorts of continuous delivery and integration mechanisms, right? And then, as you said, infrastructure as code really sort of grew out of, hey, you know, we're focusing on a DevOps philosophy here in our organization. We're changing the culture to be DevOps. Well, how do we do that? Well, we do a lot of, you know, integration and automation. Well, how do we automate? Well, we adopt something like infrastructure as code. And really, infrastructure as code is codifying exactly sort of what the state of something that you want to be. So, you know, a lot of times the examples I use is things like Ansible and Puppet, which define, you know, what a server looks like and how it's configured in code, right? And that gets applied to sort of a resource such as a server, and it gets changed into that desired state. And that's a really important piece of understanding GitOps, is that core concept of infrastructure as code, right? That core piece of there's a declarative sort of programming language that shows what your infrastructure looks like, and you can apply that to your infrastructure and to that, and it becomes that desired state. That's a big piece of what GitOps is.
Yep, and infrastructure as code was a thing even before like people started using Kubernetes, right? Like things like Puppet and Chef, I remember like 2013, 2014, people were already using those in production. There were these Puppet cons. I think I attended one of those in North Carolina. But yeah, like there have been these tools that are available, and people were using them to set up like physical servers, virtual machines, cloud instances. Like they were able to. There were so many different providers for Ansible and Terraform and Puppet that can like actually help you bring your infrastructure up. And since you wanted to add some agility even outside Kubernetes, you used these modules or templates or code to make it repeatable, right? It is very difficult for humans to do a specific task over and over and over again without introducing errors. Using something like infrastructure as code definitely helped you streamline some processes. Like you knew the end state of executing that command. You knew that, okay, once I run this playbook, this is what I'll get, and then I can deploy my application on top of it. So that's where infrastructure as code helped a lot of organizations modernize the way they deploy infrastructure stacks. It helped a lot of operations team out because it covered everything from storage infrastructure to compute infrastructure. Even Cisco had a module, if I remember correctly, in my previous jobs, where like we could set up these infrastructure stacks and have them ready for developers to come and deploy their application. But that's where it stopped. Like that's where it was, right? It wasn't it wasn't using Git as that single source of truth that we want to talk about in GitOps. You still used version control for your infrastructure as code scripts, but there wasn't a controller or something that was always checking and making sure that your desired state matches your current state. It was a one-time operation, like you can run it. And then if you run it again, it is idempotent. So like if it changed, it will fix it. Or if it's not, it won't do anything. But that's where infrastructure as code stopped. And next came GitOps.
Exactly, right? Yep. That's a key point is that we had all these great tools, but a lot of times you still had sort of DevOps teams still running these things by hand or maybe on a cron schedule or something like that, where the sort of full life cycle and automation process of what the infrastructure as code was and to that desired state and how to keep it that way, that piece of the puzzle was the thing that's missing. So and that does lead us to GitOps. So please.
The reason why GitOps came along and why it works is because Kubernetes is declarative as well, right? Kubernetes is that desired state engine. Once you ask Kubernetes to do something, you don't have to tell it like how to do certain things. Like you don't have to tell us like, okay, tell it like, okay, this is how you deploy your deployments or pods. You just list out like, okay, this is how I want my application to be. This is how I want this is the container image I want to use, and Kubernetes will make it so. So since Kubernetes had that declarative benefits, GitOps became a thing that, okay, now, like if we look at a very high level workflow, right? I can treat my application code and my infrastructure stack like as code, and I can push both of these to different Git repositories, and I can have hooks from like there are pull models and there are push models, and we'll dive into those in a few minutes. But using either of these terminologies or methodologies, you can make sure that Kubernetes is always running the latest and greatest of your infrastructure and your application code. So that's what GitOps enables. Just by doing a simple Git push into your registry, running that CI pipeline, running that CD pipeline maybe, you can make sure that whatever is running on your Kubernetes cluster is always the latest and greatest or what you want it to be. And there are some caveats and gotchas, like things that you shouldn't do when you're using GitOps. But in an ideal world, I would say like that's it. Like Git push to having your infrastructure at the version that you want it to be. That's GitOps.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, we'll dive into sort of what the principles of GitOps is. Mm-hmm. I think that'll probably help you take it even a step further to break it down for those who are still wondering, well, I still don't fully understand it. But before we do that, right, GitOps really sort of came into this sort of market along with Kubernetes. And that's, I think, a big reason why we're talking about it is because a lot of people who are managing, you know, Kubernetes clusters or, you know, on a DevOps team that, you know, really has a stack built around cloud native technologies and Kubernetes are probably either thinking about GitOps or using GitOps right these days, and making sure that they're moving towards that direction, just because it's becoming sort of a standard way to be able to manage your Kubernetes infrastructure, and that's because everything in Kubernetes is very codified. There's a lot of YAML, there's a lot of tools that easily let you spin up Kubernetes, and all that can be defined in code and files, YAML files, lots of YAML files, and put in a place in a version control like Git to really maintain that single source of truth. And that's the biggest right part. And I think why we're spending a lot of time on here. And I think a lot of the reasons because it's one of the first two principles that we're going to be talking about. So why don't we dive into the GitOps principles, Bobby?
Yep. Yeah. So the very first principle that GitOps has is declarative infrastructure. So having everything as code. I was like, for this podcast, right, I was listening to a different talk, and the person was like, in 100 years, I'm hoping we have something different from YAML. But YAML is the best tool that we have right now. So we are stuck with it.
100 years, we're going to have to deal with YAML, but...
Yeah, that was funny. But yeah, like YAML is the way we define our Kubernetes cluster. If you're like, think, if, for example, the cluster episode, that cluster API episode that we did, right? YAML is how we deploy Kubernetes clusters as well. YAML is how we define our applications and we deploy it against our Kubernetes cluster. So everything is kind of, as you said, codified and represented as a declarative infrastructure or a declarative stack. And I can push that into, which leads me to the second principle, version control system. And since we're talking about GitOps, it's Git. Like, that's where we store all of these, this information, all of the code. So let's say you have all your code that you're maybe writing and updating on your laptop. You have a Git repo somewhere. Once you are done and you're happy, you did some local unit tests, you want to push it out, you do a Git push. You update your source control repository or your version control repository in Git, and then you run, kick off a bunch of CI pipelines. Like, make sure you...
Do you want to pause you there and say, and for those of you who might not be familiar with Git, right? I just want to do a quick, what is Git thing. Git is version control. And what we mean by that is it tracks changes in any set of files on a local computer, and you can push those to a service or a server where those files are continually tracked on the server side. So it coordinates sort of work among people. So if you're all working on a code base, you can track those files, submit those changes, merge them together. And it's a collaborative tool based around, tracking changes in source code. So just wanted to
let you know. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was really helpful. And then now you have things in version control, you have tested it out, and that's when you have the way to like push your changes to your cluster. So GitOps principle 3 and 4. For third is approved changes can be automatically applied to your system. And then the fourth principle is software agents to ensure correctness and alert on diversion. So what this means is these are push approaches and pull approaches. Push approach, what does that mean? You have, in addition to your continuous integration, a CI, you have your continuous delivery or CD pipelines as well, where whenever a new branch is, or whenever a new code is merged into your branch, your main branch, or whatever you're using for your connecting to your Kubernetes cluster, something kicks out, like Jenkins X or something like that will push the new changes to your Kubernetes cluster and apply it against your Kubernetes cluster. Or the other way around is pull changes. You have an agent that this can be a Flux agent, Argo CD. You can have that running on your Kubernetes cluster, and it's continuously monitoring your Git repo. So whenever you have a new push to your Git repository, it will basically download those changes, apply it against your Kubernetes cluster, and make sure that whatever is running on your cluster exactly matches what you have in your Git repository. So that's a continuous loop that these agents do on your Kubernetes cluster itself. So those are kind of the four principles, like entire system described declaratively. Git is used as a single source of truth. Your approved changes are automatically applied to the system, or software agents are used to ensure correctness and alert on diversions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for those listening, if you go and look up like the principles of GitOps, you're going to find, you know, essentially these four across the board. And it's generally agreed on what these things are. And I do want to note here personally, and I think it's useful to kind of think about, is the first two, declarative infrastructure and version control. These are things we've been doing a long time, right? These aren't new. GitOps didn't make them up, right? Mm-hmm. GitOps to me is sort of those second two. Automated changes and change management using pull or push based, right, automation, right? Those, that's definitely a big part of what GitOps is. And then sort of the monitoring and reconciliation using the agents sort of to make sure that whatever is declared is remaining that way. And if it changes, it's to let people know. Because, you know, ultimately that those couple things at the end there are sort of the root, I think, to me, what GitOps is. And they solve real problems. Like the problem of, you know, I've deployed something to, you know, in the past without GitOps and maybe before DevOps, you deploy something to a server and you're like, yeah, it's running there. after some time, you have no idea if that thing's changed, right?
Yeah.
If, you know, you have nothing sort of keeping an eye on about what state it should be in, even before sort of infrastructure as code tools like Ansible, where you could, you know, at least run every now and then to make sure things remain the same. But that server can sort of mutate, right? And things mm-hmm. can change. The cloud provider could, you know, do updates under you, and things could go wrong. And I think that was a real pain that you find being solved with these, you know, last few principles. And I think, you know, if I were to focus on, you know, any two of these, the first two are sort of necessities. The last yep. two are really what make it.
Yep. And as you said, right, things can change even with GitOps. Like, users have to be really careful. Like, you cannot have, or you cannot claim that you're using GitOps if after you do a Git push and your infrastructure has been reconciled, you go back through the UI and make some changes, because that just breaks everything. Like, that those changes are not in your Git repository. Those are things that you modified on your own. So if you are using this this methodology or this framework, as Ryan said, you have to use it through and through. Like, you can't go and then make some manual changes through a UI, because that won't be reflected in your Git repo. And then in the future, let's say 2 months down the line, you're like, oh, let me see what's running in my production environment. And you open up that Git repo, your repo won't match what's running on your Kubernetes cluster. So if you're using this, make sure you keep away from making any manual changes on your cluster on your own.
Yeah, and in a way, the infrastructure as code, what's defined in Git, is sort of a type of documentation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we said the term single source of truth a lot, but it solves a problem of not having things documented. You know, maybe you had a runbook in the past that someone were to deploy an application, and maybe they're an expert in it. So if they're on vacation and you go to that runbook, you better hope it's accurate, right?
Yep.
And there's no missing documentation. But in a GitOps world, what's in the production is in code, right? You
yep.
know that sort of consistency will always be there, whether anyone's on vacation or forgot to document something. It's literally running what's there. So again, just a real problem, I think, that we've seen in the past, right, with just things like documentation, which is great.
Yeah.
And I know we said we'd talk about tools and frameworks next, Bhavin, but I think it probably makes sense to talk about the benefit of
yes.
why do this, right? So let's jump there.
No, like, you clearly listed out the first one, right? Like, you know what's in your repo is the single source of truth. But I just want to add to that, right? This allows you to make sure that you can go back in your history. Like, you can see what was the state over the last couple of years. You can see what changes were merged. You can look at that code changes. Like, Git becomes your thing where, like, everything that changed in production, you have a history for it. Like, there, if you're not making any manual changes, all the changes are forced through that Git repo. So you can, looking at your history or looking at your logs, you can figure out, okay, what changed? Maybe you joined as a new employee and you just wanted to see why things are the way they are. You can go back through your repo history and then you can find out what was merged and what changed. So single source of truth, we can't emphasize it enough, right? That's a really important thing for you. Like, people can come and go. You can always rely on a repository to check what's running and what was running before.
Absolutely. And I think a next one that not a lot of people think about is sort of the improved security model of the
mm-hmm.
Right. Git itself uses sort of cryptography to manage changes and verify, you know, who made that change. That's something built into Git. When you do a Git push, it happens, right? You're authenticated and
yep.
And so Git provides these sort of strong sort of guarantees on what's correct and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so that overall, I think when you have those guiding principles of Git built in, it sort of dramatically makes those CI systems harder to be seen as sort of a big gaping hole of as a threat vector, right?
Yep.
And I think that improves security, I think, maybe isn't the first thing I even thought about with GitOps. It was everything else, but I put it as the second one here because it is a big benefit.
Yeah, And to add to that, right, there is a different perspective to improving your security posture or security model. Like definitely Git has everything, but what this means is what GitOps enables you is you don't have to share access to your Kubernetes cluster with all the developers. You can give them access to your repository and you can use the security mechanisms built into Git. But this means that you don't have to open up your permissions on your actual Kubernetes cluster. You can only give permissions to that repo, and any changes that can be made comes from that repo. But other than that, your Kubernetes cluster is secure. It is its own thing. You can handle all your permissions in the Git repo, and who can push changes and what changes can be pushed. And the best part is you can approve these changes, right? Like if you don't like something, yeah, as the owner of the repo, you're like, nope, decline or whatever the term is. But
nope, declined.
Yeah. So like it does help improve your organization's security posture, because Git is the only thing that's supposed to make changes to your Kubernetes cluster. That way you can follow the principle of least privileges and have your Git repo do all the work for you.
Yeah, and that also acts as a giant audit, right?
Yep.
Everyone pushing, all your developers pushing to that instead of your Kubernetes cluster. You have an audit trail, which also I think leads me to, it simplifies application deployment for developers, right? Because they have a standard process for making changes, and mm-hmm. when they've updated their code base and run through sort of the CI to build their image and changed anything about how the application actually runs, they push it to Git, it gets reviewed, and if all is well, it deploys to the clusters, the target cluster, whether that be dev, test, sort of in a very consistent and common way, right? And I think for developers, it makes a big difference when they kind of know a standard way that they have to interact. And I know this from experience of working with many different Kubernetes clusters directly, maybe they're different versions of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you're interacting with them specifically, well, maybe this YAML doesn't work with that cluster, right? Because it's running a different version, or that cloud doesn't support that thing. Well, their interaction should obfuscate a lot of that, and mm-hmm. the CI/CD systems and sort of pipelines to get it deployed should manage, those types of things and or the review process in general.
Yeah, and like simplified application development, right? Like it's simple to say like, okay, the process is easy, but it has real benefits. Like it increases your developer's productivity. Like it increases the speed with which you can push out code. It enhances the overall developer experience that you have inside your organization. So GitOps has those unrealized benefits that you might only see in like maybe 6 months or a year. You won't see it day one, but like once you build that philosophy or you build or adopt that framework inside your organization, you will see these real benefits show up. So and I want to go back to your audit log, like in the security model discussion. Like yes, like we want to do blameless post-ops, post-mortems, but that gives me a list of like, okay, who messed up? Sorry. Or what messed
Bobbin
up? Sorry.
Really wants the who, no?
Yeah. Who should I be blaming in a blameless postmortem? Like, who should I be giving that look?
No. Hopefully a group of people that can look back at what went wrong, right?
Yep.
from who delivered it to who reviewed it. I mean, there's always multiple hands in play. But yeah, I mean, it's a big part of it. And ultimately, all these things should lead to done right should lead to faster things mm-hmm. in production, meaning going from development to production when you have these things in play. And I know it sounds easy to say, right? There are a lot of moving pieces, and it does take some getting used to, making your, having your developers interact with your systems this way, especially if they're, used to interacting directly with clusters. It can be a change. But again, this is why I think going back to a changing culture in org is definitely part of that education process. It's not just rolling out new technology.
Yep.
That never really works. You have to definitely adopt, the mindset. Being in a DevOps model already helps, right? And being a Kubernetes shop and adopting GitOps is always going to be, I think, a good place to start. But I think
and a majority of developers if not all, like 100%, should be familiar with Git. Like, that's how they should be writing code. I think that's what they teach us in school. Like, this is how you maintain.
Familiar with them. Yeah.
Yeah. So this
experience.
Yep. Yeah. So this shouldn't be something really different or really drastic for them, right? Like, they should be familiar with how Git works. This is just taking that to the next step and actually taking it to production. So yeah, it does help with like making sure it's the process is overall simpler.
Absolutely. And from an ops standpoint, the correctness and sort of consistency of that code base is very, very helpful, right? Not having to rely on things that used to work in the past, but may or may not work. It is what's working right now, right? And having that sort of ability to you know, make sure that is consistent across the board and having everyone do it that way. I think this works the best on this topic is this works the best if everyone uses this model, right?
Yep.
Not like, hey, we're going to tell this group of developers to do it this way, but then we have these like special DevOps-y people who can touch.
Who have superpowers.
Who have admin access and touch the cluster directly. It doesn't work as well that way, right? We definitely have to think about it from the point of view. So I think we covered the benefits we wanted to talk about with GitOps. Maybe it makes sense to talk about a push-pull model, and then we'll dive into tools before we tell people where to get started.
Yeah, and just one thing on the benefits part, right? As you said, like, you shouldn't have people who have access to your Kubernetes cluster and make changes. You shouldn't have super users, because the whole point of GitOps, the whole point of DevOps is to move towards a model where you're not figuring out what exact kernel modules and what exact packages run on your production environment, and then try to troubleshoot that either in real time, or you are trying to mimic the environment and replicate it in a testing environment to update or fix things or do root cause analysis. You should just rely on Git to push changes to your Kubernetes cluster, and if the latest change broke something, there is a Git rollback. Like, you can roll it back. Whatever worked in the past, like whatever worked an hour before, should work again. So, like, again, I'm not selling it enough. Like, this will bring you real value. Even though I don't work for a vendor that sells GitOps, it's just this is something that can help the ecosystem a lot by just adopting these principles and getting these benefits.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
So push-pull, we've used these terms, and I know you explained it a little bit, but I think it's probably worth sort of diving into what push-pull really means and what the differences are. So I guess I'll give a stab at sort of the push-based model and push-based, pull-based, and then you can kind of add to it. So with push-based, and the name helps, right, in this terminology. And if you know Git, push and pull should also be very familiar terminologies. It's usually a deployment strategy that's sort of implemented in CI/CD, right? So with tools like Jenkins, Travis CI, Circle CI, source code sort of for the application lives there. All the YAML to deploy applications or configure what you need to configure lives there. And that build pipeline that we're used to with CI/CD is triggered, which ultimately builds container images and finally deploys the actual YAML files to the clusters from the CI/CD tooling, meaning that it's pushing the changes from the Git repo and CI/CD to the cluster. It's applying them. If you're familiar with kubectl, right, it's kind of like saying kubectl apply.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens sort of in that sort of build pipeline. And so that's my definition. And I'll let you add to it, because I know you probably have something to add to it. And then sort of the push-based model is a different strategy, meaning that it's the same concepts that are sort of I just talked about with push-based, but it's different in how that pipeline actually works, meaning that, you know, traditional CI/CD pipeline is triggered externally, whereas a pull-based environment is sort of an agent that lives and observes changes to a repo, meaning that when a change is approved and put into Git, it'll say, oh, look, the state of this thing needs to change. I've recognized that. And as my agent in the environment, and say in a Kubernetes cluster, it will take that and make sure that change is then matched sort of that desired state is matching actual state in the cluster, meaning it pulls that changed into the cluster. And that it's again, a lot of the same tools are going to be used, but the end state of that first one, the push model, pushes it to the cluster and applies it, versus the end state of the pull model is you've made the change in Git and your agent takes over.
Yep. Yeah. I can't add anything to that, but one thing, right? Like it will be different set of tools. Like you might be using something like Jenkins X and CircleCI, as Ryan mentioned, to use the push model, but the pull model will be something like a Flux CD or an Argo CD thing, where you have an operator and a custom resource running on your Kubernetes cluster. So like that will be the first step, right? Like you will need that agent to be running on your Kubernetes cluster. And then once it's up and running, you have linked it to your Git repo. It will follow that reconciliation loop and make sure that whatever changes are approved and merged are reflected on your Kubernetes cluster as well. So different set of tools. Again, there is, like personally, we don't have any preference. Something that you want to use in your organization, go for it. Just follow the methodology or the framework, and you will get these benefits. Yep.
Yeah, and I think a key differentiator with the push and pull is that, you know, push only applies things when that external event happens, that pipeline is triggered. Versus when you have an agent sort of looking at a repo, it'll always make sure that desired state, a lot like, you know, it worked with things like Puppet and Ansible. You had agents sort of looking at, you know, things and applying into the servers, everything ever changed. Like if NTP gets changed or if someone does it, it'll go fix that. In pull-based, it does the same thing.
Agreed. And I think one of the things, like before we talk about the tools, right, one of the things that we didn't cover is secrets. Like you shouldn't be pushing actual secrets, or you shouldn't be storing credentials in your Git repo. That is a gotcha. So make sure that while you are looking at GitOps, right, use something like a HashiCorp vault or some key management system or some credential management system where you can store your credentials and store your secrets. So whenever your change gets approved or merged, and your Flux operator maybe is, or Flux resources agent is trying to reconcile things, it's not like actually pulling plain text credentials. It is using something like a key management system to have that on your Kubernetes cluster. So that is something that's not covered by GitOps today. So make sure you have a strategy for it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's switch gears and talk about some of the tools and frameworks that are probably, if you look GitOps up, you're going to find. The first one I want to talk about is Weaveworks. Their sort of agent and framework is based around Flux and mm-hmm. sort of they were very early on in the GitOps days. It's going to be one of the getting started guides that we suggest, right? Weaveworks is definitely one of those ones where is definitely a great place for information and education mm-hmm. around what GitOps is and how to, you know, really get started and get your feet wet with the whole process. Flux is actually part of sort of what you'll find in the Weaveworks information. Trying to find a good sort of definition for Flux. I didn't write one down here.
Okay. But like just to list off tools, right? While you do that, like Weaveworks, I think that they were the ones that coined the term GitOps, and they run these GitOps cons on a I think annual basis or maybe a 6-month basis. So you'll always find a good amount of information, good amount of customer use cases that are coming and talking at those conferences. So in addition to the tools, they also have a lot of resources that you can go and learn more about this topic and see how you can actually implement it in your Kubernetes cluster. But they have things like Weave GitOps Core, which is like a free and open source continuous delivery product that you can use to run your apps in Kubernetes. They also have like a cloud offering called Weave Cloud, which gives you that experience. It gives you workflows. It gives you a dashboard. Argo CD, right? That was a really successful open source project. I know Intuit supported a lot of it or had people dedicated working on that project. I know a couple of people who were working in Intuit. They basically left Intuit and started their own company called Acuity, and they are basically offering an enterprise version of Argo CD, but still contributing back. So there is like a startup now in the ecosystem that is maintaining Argo CD as a project with some venture funding.
Absolutely.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done.
At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies, count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Switching back to Flux, both Flux and Argo CD, and I don't know about any of the other ones we're talking about, are CNCF projects. I think they're both incubating, but Flux is that sort of observability portion of that we talked about earlier in sort of how GitOps works, right? It's that thing that sits in your environment that observes your Git repo, and essentially you make changes to the Git repo and Flux will look at that, make changes all based on that. And there's a whole bunch of sort of secondary tools that are sort of involved with the Flux projects around, Git and security and Canary deployments, those kind of things that you can kind of dive into. But there's a lot out there. We're not going to dive into each one of them. CodeFresh has a bunch of tools and frameworks and things you can do with GitOps. One I mentioned earlier in the show was GitLab. GitLab has a whole bunch of features that have been sort of behind their paywall, but until today, I guess, or 15.3, some of them are free. So that pull-based model, I believe, is now free. With it, Harness. I haven't done much of that with that myself, but I know it's another tool out there. And Weaveworks has a really good repo at github.com/weaveworks/awesome-gitops, which has a whole bunch of tools and information around a lot of what we talked about today, and is a great place to start. So that's a great next step, I guess.
Yeah, and then tying it back, right? Like something that we covered in the news section of this podcast was an article that lists all the different tools. There is a CI/CD section, like they list Argo, and then other CI/CD tools that are hosted by CNCF include things like Flux, which we spoke about, Brigade, Captain, OpenGitOps, OpenCrew. So there are different options available. You can learn more about these, try it out, see if it works for you, and get started.
Yeah, exactly. And the links that we'll put into where to get started with GitOps are really all around Argo CD and Weaveworks. There are going to be others out there if you look into this. These are just ones that I've gone through the Weaveworks myself, so I know that that's a good experience, so I can recommend it. I haven't done the Argo CD one, but I know it being involved with CNCF, and I've heard a lot about it, a lot of good things about it. Argo-CD.readthedocs.io. There's a really good getting started there as well. So we'll include all those links where you can get your hands on, started with GitOps. So
yeah, while I was doing my research as well, right, just making sure that I'm representing what's latest and greatest, I also came across this cool YouTube channel called the DevOps Toolkit. I think it's run by Victor. Yeah, he does a great job. Like he does a lot of Kubernetes things, but he has a specific playlist for GitOps, and he talks about Argo, he talks about Flux, he talks about his experience with them as well. So if you're looking for more resources in addition to what Ryan mentioned, I would recommend that YouTube channel as well.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're going to wind the show down here. I think, my big takeaways for this, GitOps topic is really trying to understand those principles, right?
Yeah.
Everything is described declaratively. Everything is inversioned in Git, which shows the desired state, which gives you a whole bunch of benefits, right? Those things, two things, again, we've been doing for a long time. Number three is that, approved changes can be automatically applied to the system, again, through push or pull mechanisms. Both work in GitOps. I think pull is definitely, becoming more popular with things like operators and Kubernetes and things like that. And then lastly, right, those software agents that make a big difference, that sort of run and keep an eye on that desired state. It's that actual state to make sure it matches the desired state, right? Really kind of understanding those four principles and where in sort of the stack each thing sort of has a play in your infrastructure. And once you kind of understand that, I think it makes a lot of sense why this makes a lot of sense.
Yep. Yeah. And just to add my takeaways, right? If you follow these principles, benefits will include things like you have a single source of truth, you have a log, you have an audit log, You can see all the different changes that were made to your Kubernetes cluster or your application. So that's one key benefit. You get an improved security model. So you can follow a least privileged model for your Kubernetes cluster. You can use permissions inside Git, who can merge code, who can approve code. And that's what gets pushed to your Kubernetes cluster. It increases your developer experience or enhances your developer experience, increases productivity, simplifies the overall process, and it makes sure that there is consistency, right? Like what is in your repo is what's supposed to be on your Kubernetes cluster. So I think that's me, right? Like that's my four key benefits that I get from using GitOps as a framework.
Absolutely. And for those listening, you know, hopefully you found this useful. If you're new to GitOps, hopefully we covered, you know, enough to really have you a little more comfortable with the topic of what GitOps is and how it became to be. But, you know, that's it for today's show. And I do want to encourage, you know, our listeners to reach out to us, you know, review us. You know, we had a listener reach out on LinkedIn the other day and kind of, you know, appreciate the show and also suggest a topic. That's perfect. That's exactly what we're sort of the type of feedback we're looking for. You know, we're excited to hear about what you want to hear about, and hopefully we can find the right people to talk about those things. So please encouraging you to message and or view us wherever you consume your podcast and or on social media. The next podcast we have coming up is going to be talking about Kafka. So lots of cool stuff. If you're kind of involved with Kafka, use message queues, this will probably be a good episode for you. But with that, that brings us to the end of today's episode. I'm Ryan.
I'm Bhavin.
And thanks for joining another episode of Kubernetes Bytes.
Thank you for listening to the Kubernetes Bytes podcast.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies, count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.